Hey, Open Mic Podcast listeners. Want to share your opinions, give me feedback, or tell me what you're thinking? If you do, send me a voice message. Voice messages are an easy way for you to send me audio that might end up in future episodes of the podcast. They're the latest feature from Anchor, the platform that I use to make this show. Here are some things that I would love to hear from you. What questions do you have for me? What did you think of the episode? What did you think of the topic? Who should I interview next? Make up a theme song. I don't know. Do your best impression of me. I'll see all of your messages and I might add them into a future episode. Anchor makes that part super easy. You can send me a voice message right now from wherever you're at, wherever you're listening. Just tap the link in my show notes and I can't wait to hear from you. Again, thanks for listening to the Open Mic Podcast. Until next time, cheers and be well and enjoy today's episode.
It's time for the Open Mic Podcast with your host, Brett Allen. Broadcasting live from the Bay Area studios, here at the Open Mic, no topic is off limits. And of course, you never know who may stop by. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into episode 130 of the Open Mic Podcast. I am super excited to be here with you. The weekend is almost here. Hope everybody's having a fantastic hump day. We have a super awesome guest lined up for you today. I apologize. Today's episode is a little bit late, but life has been crazy lately. And I know I promised a solo episode, and hopefully on Friday I can do that. So for those hoping for the solo episode, I apologize from the bottom of my heart. Sometimes taking some time to put that show material together takes a little bit longer than I expected. And I don't want it to just be a stream of consciousness or random thoughts spit out across the microphone. I like it to have some meaning and some purpose. Not to mention, I am starting to get a sore throat and I have no idea where that came from. It's that time of year, I guess, where people start getting sick. But it's becoming to a point where it's really hard to talk. So, quite honestly, this might be the last episode for the week. I really want to try and push out Friday's episode and be as consistent as possible to everyone who listens and joins in. So I apologize about that. So there's that. On top of everything else, I had a bunch of interviews get rescheduled this week that were supposed to happen that didn't wind up happening. But tonight's guest, I'm really excited to share with you, Oscar Trimboli. One of the nicest people that I have ever possibly met, and not to mention the fact that he focuses in on deep listening and how to be an excellent listener, and I feel like that's something that all of us can benefit from. So I really think tonight's guest is going to bring you some fantastic content. He's all the way across the pond in Australia, so he's like 14 hours ahead. Super nice guy, and we actually will have some giveaways that he is providing us. So if you listen to this episode, wherever you are, please email us and let us know so we can send you a free gift. He sent me this beautiful gift box, Deep Listening, and it has exercise cards and have some books in it and a few other things. But if you hear this episode and you email openmicguest@gmail.com, OPENMIC, GUEST at gmail.com, I will send you a free gift from Oscar Trimboli. So definitely let us know what you thought of the program. Without further ado, Oscar, welcome to the Open Mic Podcast. It's good to have you here today.
G'day, Brett.
Yes. Well, it's technically evening, I think, where you are, correct? You are far across the pond. Where are you exactly so our listeners can get an idea of where you're at?
Yeah, we're on a very humid summer's day in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and we're in summertime and you guys are in your wintertime.
Yes, we are. It's pouring rain outside, so you can send some of that sunshine this way to Northern California. I'll gladly take it.
And we'll take your rain in reverse because we need it here.
Okay. Yeah, I bet you do. So let's dive right in. Your specific thing that you do is deep listening, which when I first found out about this, I was instantly intrigued. And you sent me a wonderful gift as well. And I want to thank you on air for that. I have just been piling through these cards, understanding them. So let's talk about what is deep listening.
Deep listening is the ability to listen beyond the words. Most of us can see in color, but we listen in black and white. We're kind of two-dimensional listeners because we've never been really taught how to do it. You can always remember a maths teacher for good or bad reasons from school, but none of us can remember our listening teacher, despite the fact we spend more than half of our day listening. And a deep listener will listen at five levels. Most of us and the active listening movement that was started off in the 80s and the 90s taught you to listen to content and what people are saying and taught you how to paraphrase and nod and confirm. But really, there's five levels of listening, and deep listeners aren't better listeners than anybody else. The difference between a deep listener and a recreational listener, a deep listener notices when they're distracted faster and gets back to listening sooner.
I guess the next question is, how did you begin getting into this? Because this is a very interesting topic, I would say, for sure.
Yeah, I'd love to tell you I had a very clear intergalactic plan that joined all the dots, but it was completely organic. And if I go through my life, whether it was at school, where there were 23 nationalities at our school, from South America, from Asia, from Eastern Europe, or whether that was in my work life, there was always a thread about listening, and I helped bridge a gap between those who could speak English as their first language and those that couldn't speak English as their first language at school. And a lot of people wanted, we played card games at school in our break, and yeah, we even played card games during school, and people wanted me on their teams, and I didn't know why, because I wasn't very good at counting cards. And we were playing card games that were European card games and card games that were Asian card games. But because I was reading, listening for body language, people wanted me on their team because I could see what people were kind of holding in the cards just by listening to what their faces were saying. And then in workplaces, I always was passionate about making sure that we listen to customers, whether that's at Microsoft or at Vodafone or in large software companies. Listening became obvious as I look back, but not in the moment. And then somebody said to me one day, if you could teach the world to do what you're doing to me right now, not only do I feel heard, but I feel seen.
Mm-hmm.
You could change the world if you could teach that, if you could codify that. Now, that was told to me in a software company, so coding means something slightly different.
Sure.
But what I realized is, maybe that's a possibility worth exploring, and kind of have been doing it for the last 5 years and just keep on going. That's the story, Brent.
Wow. So you mentioned some very interesting statistics that 55% of our time is spent listening, but really only 2% of that time or 2% of that demographic is actually listening. If I understand that correctly, where is the disconnect between that large number and that small number? Where are we as, I guess, human beings, so to speak, going wrong with not listening properly?
Yeah, so minimum 55% of your day is spent listening. Only 2% of us have ever been trained in how to listen. So it means 98% of us don't. Why that happens is really simple. 86% of us think we're above average car drivers. So statistically impossible. 84% of people think they're above average intelligence or IQ. And again, over 50%, it's impossible for that number. And when it comes to listening, 84% of people think they're above average listeners. The difference is when you get a driver's license, you have to undertake some kind of examination and do some kind of study. But very few of us have been taught formally how to listen. So that's one of the disconnects. Number one, we don't know it's a problem. And number two, we never understand what in maths we understand: add, subtract, divide, multiply, four basic operators. But we don't know what that is for listening. And listening's hard. We've researched nearly 1,410 people, and we asked them, what are the big barriers for listening? And the biggest barriers aren't paying attention to the other person per se. Most people struggle with the noise inside their own head, Brett, while they're listening to somebody else. In fact, guess what's happening for people listening on the podcast right now? It's happening for them right now. They're distracted. Their attention's diverted from them, and they can't focus because they've never been taught how. So these are the barriers getting in our way. But the good news is, at 20 weeks, you could in your mother's womb, you could distinguish your mother's voice from any other sound outside of the body. And at 32 weeks, you could distinguish Beethoven from Bon Jovi. So we learned to hear and distinguish sounds even before we were born. But our very act of birth, we come into the world kicking and screaming, and we want to be noticed for the rest of our life by talking. And I think in the 20th century, there's been a big movement to teach people how to speak. And hopefully in the 21st century, there'll be a big movement teaching people how to listen as well.
Wow. I have to tell you, what you're saying just kind of overtakes my mental landscape. It's unbelievable. Like, I guess we just don't realize how distracted we could really be. Now, from your perspective, do you think our phones and our televisions and social media, that plays a part somewhat in our active listening and our distractions?
Yeah, so it's external and it's internal. So externally, it's definitely electronic devices, but it's also other kind of visual and auditory stimulus as well. So you could be trying to listen to somebody in a coffee shop and a big truck goes by, and that will distract you in the moment. So there's kind of three basic things that get in your way of distraction. The neuroscience tells us really simply that I'm speaking at about 125 words a minute, which is a little bit slower than most. Most people speak at about 125, 150. If you're auctioning cattle, you're probably talking at about 200 words a minute, or you're calling a racehorse coming across the finish line. That's about 200 words a minute. But you can listen to 400 words a minute. So your mind is programmed to be distracted. Your mind is able to fill in 400 words that you're listening for, despite the fact I'm only speaking at 100. So you're making up a story in your head. So if you understand the 125-400 rule means you are listening to somebody speak at 125, you can listen at 400. Just knowing you're going to be distracted puts you ahead of 98% of other listeners. So number one, know, Brett, you will be distracted. Your mind is set up that way. You are set up to fail. Number two, we don't know how to breathe properly. Sounds kind of crazy, right? I'm breathing.
It does. It does.
But high-performance athletes, high-performance opera singers, high-performance military people like Navy SEALs or snipers all know about this technique called box breathing. And basically it means, imagine there's a box inside your chest cavity and you go down one side for 8 seconds, across for 8 seconds and up, and breathe in a box formation. The ancients have taught us this already. Ancient practitioners from India and yoga, Native American Indians, Australian Aborigines and New Zealand Maoris, all these people had techniques around breathing. Why does breathing matter? The deeper you breathe, the deeper you listen, because you're getting more oxygen to the brain. So more oxygen to the brain, the easier it is to listen. And finally, a hydrated brain is a listening brain. The brain is only about 3% of the body mass of your body, but it consumes 26% of the blood sugars. So if you can get lots of fluids in your body, listening's a really hard thing to do when you haven't been trained. So number one, cell phones, laptops, iPads, all these devices are going to distract you. Try and avoid them. Number two, the deeper you breathe, the deeper you'll listen. And number three, make sure that a hydrated brain is a listening brain. And if you love Starbucks, you're going to have to drink one glass of water extra for every cup of coffee you drink, because that's something that's actually going to dehydrate you rather than hydrate you. And if you think of a modern world where somebody wakes up, grabs their cell phone and goes to Starbucks for a coffee in the morning and not even conscious of his breathing, you can see why we're set up to fail straight away, Brett.
It makes perfect sense. So the idea of I need coffee in the morning to be able to listen and get things going probably isn't 100% true, would you say? As far as
I'm not going to change anybody's coffee drinking preferences, that's for sure. Do you have a favorite?
I do, yeah. I typically just get an iced coffee. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about me. You can talk about me specifically.
We'll use
that way we don't.
Just get a glass of water, Brett, when you have that coffee. That's all I'm asking you to do. Not hard. So have your coffee and then drink a glass of water. You should pretty much have a glass of water every hour for the whole day. But most of us probably have 3 cups of coffee during the day, and that's probably a fluid intake. It's not setting your body up for high performance when it comes to listening, that's for sure.
That's good. I'll have to put that into practice tomorrow.
What do you think you struggle with listening?
What do I think we struggle with?
No, you. What do you think? What do you think you struggle with when it comes to listening?
Oh, okay. So we're going to turn the tables here.
I'm curious.
I think for me, what I struggle with is remembering specific details. So if I'm having a conversation with somebody and somebody mentions a name, let's say, now your name, obviously I remember it, but as an example, I was talking to a fellow podcaster and we both work with Interview Connections who set us up, and we were talking about a particular guest and we had just had a conversation about this like hours before. And then he's like, who was it? And I go, I don't remember the name. And so I gave him like two or three different things. So I think for me, that's what I struggle with is remembering specific details, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And that's a great example. So we've got kind of 4 villains of listening. And the villain that you are is the lost listener. We have the shrewd listener, the dramatic listener, as other examples of these villains of listening. And then the lost listener is characterized by somebody who struggles to keep the detail. They kind of vague out in the conversation sometimes as well. So, but we're all lost listeners depending on who we listen to, because we listen relationally and we listen situationally. That means we listen differently to our parents, for example, than we listen to our coworkers, or we might listen differently to a doctor than we listen to children, as an example. So the kind of villain you are when you show up as a listener will vary, but in that particular context there, the lost listener was showing up in the way that you were listening there. I'll give you a good hack, though. I interviewed Boris Conrad, who's the 4 times world memory champion from Germany. Also a neuroscience, because he doesn't have enough things to do. So as a neuroscientist, he can also tell me why this matters. But the technique he gives with remembering names is to try and create some kind of visual image to associate with that person. Now, for me, it's really easy, because you just visualize that little statuette at the Oscars awards and the visual connection's made. But equally, if you're taking notes and you're trying to remember a conversation, his strong encouragement to listen is not to take notes verbatim, but to draw pictures that give you graphical representations, because the graphical recall part of the memory is much stronger because of our history as humans than it is to handwrite words. By the way, the minute you start to handwrite words when you're in a conversation with someone, you actually shut off the auditory cortex in the brain. And as a result, you're not actually listening to anything they're saying while you're writing it down. So if you're writing down words, you're shutting it down. If you're writing down pictures, you'll be able to continuously take in what they're saying. And the recall's simpler as well. So if the brain can go back to a visual image, it'll remember that quickly. Quick tip, when you meet somebody, make sure you say their name straight away when you shake their hand or you meet them, and that will help with the brain recall as well. There's some tips from Boris, 4-time world memory champion, who can read back a shuffled deck of cards in about 50 seconds in correct order.
That is crazy that somebody is capable of doing that.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, I want to dig into something specific. What are, we mentioned this earlier, the five levels of listening?
So the five levels are: level one, listen to yourself. Level two, listen to the content. Level three, listen to the context. Level four, sounds a bit like a ninja move, but bear with me, listen for what's unsaid. And then level five, listen for meaning. Now, most literature will teach you to focus on the speaker to listen better. But if your mind is completely confused and full of a story you're telling yourself, you can't listen to the other person. That's why the most important person to listen to is yourself, to set your brain up to be available for the conversation. So if you're in a workplace and you're going from one meeting room to another, if you're just remembering the last meeting and that's stuck in your head, you're not going to be available to anybody to be able to listen to them. It's like a desk. It's like a filing cabinet. Once it's full, you just can't put more things in it. So the first thing you need to do is make sure you empty as much of your mind as possible so that you can be prepared to listen to the other person. I don't know about you, Brett, but I'd never turn up to a concert with a set of earphones in on playing. But that's how most of us turn up to a conversation. We've got this story, we've got this song, we've got this movie playing in our head about the last meeting or what we think is going to happen in the next meeting. We're just not open to listening.
Interesting. You know, what you're saying makes sense, because just in normal conversation, there is so much white noise going on in the back of my head. Even as we're talking now, I'm listening to you and picking up on what you're saying, but it's crazy that my brain is like 10 steps ahead of this conversation. So is it incredibly frustrating for you when you're talking to people? And I'm not trying to corner you, but I'm very curious. Is it frustrating when you're having a conversation with somebody and you just know that they're not really paying attention to what you're saying?
I think it'd be pretty arrogant of me to judge anybody's listening.
Sure.
I think all of us struggle with it. I think all of us need to understand that if we just bring a bit of humility to the listening part of it, the most powerful thing people say to me is when I say, look, hey, Brett, I'm really sorry. I'm got a bit lost there. Could you say that again? My apologies. And all of a sudden you've sent them a signal to say, okay, I'm human. Yep, I make mistakes, but I respect you enough to ask you and tell you that I've made a mistake. Most of us will just continue on and then try and retrofit the story as we go along. So it's funny when I talk to press or to podcast hosts, the first thing they worry about is I'm judging their listening while I'm being interviewed. And it couldn't be the furthest thing from my mind.
That's funny.
So I think all of us, if we knew that simple fact that you're aware of now that you got some white noise in your head, you're probably looking at a screen, you're anticipating maybe some questions that are coming up, and while you're doing that, maybe you're not fully present in the conversation. And this is real life. This is what happens. And the point I make is that the difference between a deep listener and a recreational listener, a deep listener will know faster when they're distracted and come back into the conversation. Whereas somebody who's a recreational listener will just keep going on. And before they know it, somebody's finished and you go, oh, what did they say?
So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, so we've all got to be patient with each other. I think that's probably a little bit lacking in our modern society. We're expecting things to happen a heck of a lot quicker. In high context cultures, Japan, Korea, China, silence is respected much more. Silence is much more a part of the dialogue. And in Western cultures, whether that's Australia, the US, United Kingdom, Canada, silence isn't something that's nuanced or used deliberately in conversations. You could be in Korea and there'd be 5, 10, 15 seconds, depending on the seniority of the person, pause in a conversation, And that silence is about thinking time and interpretation rather than necessarily that person trying to figure out their next question.
Very interesting. Very interesting, Oscar. And yes, it's true. I was a little nervous because I was like, how am I as a podcast host who is supposed to think five or six steps ahead and be ready to pivot at any moment, be especially with the 125-400 rule. You did make a comment on the cards. It says, you know, that means that you need to ask three times more questions than you think is normal. Yeah. So there's really no such thing as a dumb question, right? I mean, it's okay to ask multiple questions, but does there come a point where it can be, I don't want to say disrespectful, but it's obvious that you're just not flat out paying attention?
Yeah, of course. And the questions are always to progress the conversation rather than to progress your understanding of what they're saying. If you remember, a conversation is the intersection of two people, and in groups and systems, slightly different, but we'll talk about that a bit later. You know, if you ask those kinds of questions, Brett, a lot of us will ask questions that are specific to the content. We'll ask, you know, what do you mean by that? And could you explain that? As opposed to simpler questions like, sounds like you've been giving that a lot of thought. Pause. Well, actually, yeah, I've been thinking about it for 3 weeks. Or they go, I've been thinking about it for the last 3 hours. The question after that is very different if the answer was 3 weeks or 3 hours.
Huh.
So for someone who's skilled at those kind of how and what questions, you know, the script doesn't matter. You can almost throw it out. You know, the best conversations don't have scripts. The dialogue will take you there if you trust the person at the other end of the mic, like someone like me. But you do have to have some kind of structure. But if you're asking them to explain the same concept a third and fourth time, it mightn't be you. They just might be rubbish at explaining a really complex topic as well.
Interesting. So I want to talk to you about something, and this made me think of this. Stream of consciousness questions. I don't know if you're super familiar with those, but what would cause somebody, so let's say we're in this interview, I'm kind of thinking this question as it's coming out, and I have questions here and I have your one sheet and I'm working off of that. But if I ask the question, but then I kind of start to go off on a tangent a little bit, is it considered to be a bit much, if that makes any sense? Like, just get to the question or to the point of the question, or am I just unprepared as a host and not really sure what I'm asking?
Yeah, I think the questions obviously have to have a purpose, and no disrespect to you. It's not about you. It's about the questions you think the audience would want to ask. So I think if more of the questions are questions that are intriguing to you but not intriguing to the audience, then yeah, let's pop those kinds of questions in the can. Pop them in the recycling bin. But I think talk to me more about these stream of consciousness questions. I haven't heard that phrase before.
So stream of consciousness would be, let's say we're talking about a car that you own and I'm asking you about the car. And instead of me saying, what kind of car do you drive? It would be, so you drive a car and I love cars. Is it a red car? Is it a blue car? You know, is it two door or four door? Does it have tinted windows? So what type of car do you drive? That's what I'm talking about, stream of consciousness. So it's like you are thinking the question up as you go along instead of just asking the question.
Yeah, and that's a really good example of what-based questions, but I think sprinkle in a couple of how-based questions as well. How did you come to select the car?
That's a good question.
That would be an interesting question, because not only do you understand the car, but then you understand the intersection of them, their meaning and what they make of the car. So, you know, if I like fast red cars, it's very different to if I like hybrid cars versus electric cars or antique cars or cars that have unique stories that sit behind them. You know, my car used to be owned by Jerry Seinfeld. That's why I bought it. So how-based questions, you know, in the West, again, we're really good at asking why and what questions, but exploring how questions, which is how are you thinking about it? How did you think about it? How have you come to this decision? Hey, tell me what things you've ruled out in making this decision. What assumptions are sitting behind this decision? And all of a sudden with these questions, they're all how-based questions, even though they've got the occasional what thrown in, you can start to understand the connection between what they're saying, what you're hearing, and the meaning that comes from that as well, which is the fifth level of listening, is listening for meaning.
I love it. So you mentioned something earlier about listening to what's unsaid.
Yeah.
How can we become better at that?
Yeah. The best way to bring this to life is about 3 years ago, I was working with an organization of about 300 people, and we were working with their leadership team. It was about 11 people, and we were in a very narrow boardroom for at least a day. And there's a kind of room that's got no windows. It's got really poor air conditioning, and it's really narrow and tight. There's not a lot of space in the room. And we got to the part of the day. The organization was struggling with growth. They'd done very well. They'd been growing at about 30% per annum for the first 5 years of their setup. But they've gone to single-digit growth, which isn't bad given the scale of the organization, but the leaders wanted more. And I asked the room, you know, if you were to describe this organization as an animal, how would you describe it? And everybody said an eagle or an osprey or a seagull or a sea eagle. These were all fast-moving birds that adapted really quickly and could kill anything from, you know, a mile away and catch a fish in the ocean and swim out and all those kinds of amazing things you'd associate with it. And we'd got to the point where we'd gone around the room and there was only one person, Elaine. Elaine was kind of quiet, and I paused and I looked at the company owner, and he had this very agitated, let's move on look on his face. It's like, okay, come on, it's nearly lunchtime. Can we move on? We've all said our animal. I don't understand this exercise, but, you know. And I turned to Elaine and I said, would you like to offer an animal? And she said, I think we're a snake. And you could hear a pin drop. You could hear a pin drop in the room. So what's going through your head now when I say snake?
Something evil or deceptive or something like that.
Yeah. And I'm sure for all the other 10 people in the room, they were thinking the same. So I was really deliberately holding the silence in what would have felt like an eternity for everybody, but it was really 10 seconds.
And wow.
I said, Elaine, tell me more. She said, oh, I thought it was obvious. And I said, maybe to everyone here, but forgive me, it's not obvious to me. She said, we are like a snake. We are like a snake. We adapt every season and we shed our skin. And we've been great in the past at adapting and shedding our skin for our customers, but I think we've forgotten how to do that. And you could feel the oxygen come back into the room as everybody breathed out, because they were expecting her to say slimy, evil, all those characteristics you're talking about. The point of the story is twofold. If we would have ignored her, we would have missed this opportunity. We would have not listened to what was unsaid. Now, what happened next was even more interesting. Over the rest of the day, they decided to make the snake into a mascot. They made beanie snakes that they gave to all the staff. Projects and products. Code names became snake names, and they incorporated the snake story that was told on that day into their sales presentations. Now, they're not going to completely claim credit for the snake metaphor being the reason why they got back to double-digit growth, but if you talk to the CEO and the leadership team, it's something they talk about a lot. So in that moment, two things could have happened. We could have ignored somebody who didn't speak up. Something would have been left unsaid. And number two, we would have missed the opportunity to make some meaning out of what was going on there as well. So in that moment where there was enough pause in the room and enough trust to allow Elaine to talk about the snake, suddenly that transformed the conversation. If we don't listen to what's unsaid, we miss out on so many opportunities. listening to what's unsaid is crucial, because we speak at 125 words a minute, yet we think at 900. So, Brett, the likelihood that the first thing out of somebody's mouth is a perfectly formed idea of what they're thinking about, it's about a 1 in 9 chance, or 11%. I don't know about you, but if my surgeon offered me an 11% chance of survival from the surgery, I'd be asking for a second opinion, yet we do it every day when we don't ask people about the unsaid. And here's the tip. When you're talking to someone one-on-one and you want to explore what's unsaid, just ask them this. I'm curious what else you're thinking about on this topic, on this issue, on this whatever. So if you ask them that, that gives their mind some time to go and explore the other 800 words that are stuck in their head that they need to get out. And they will give you some brilliant code words. When you've nailed the unsaid, they'll say things to you that sound like, you know what? What's really important to me is, or they'll say words like, you know what really matters on this topic? Or the most important thing I can tell you on this is, and these kinds of words come out when people start to explore the unsaid, and they rarely say it the first time. They say it the second, the third, or the fourth time, because they're exploring what's left in their head. So ninja listeners will be able to listen to what's unsaid carefully and deliberately.
I love it. And I appreciate you answering that question. And I think it gives me a different format or something to think about that stream of consciousness and maybe ask a question like you suggested. So what other thoughts do you have on this particular topic? Which is great. I think that's a great, very great pro tip. Thank you for that, Oscar. I appreciate that.
Yeah, so and if you're a podcast host, you can always say, what's a story that brings that to life?
Yeah, that's great. I feel like I've learned so much, and I think our listeners will definitely benefit relationships, husbands, wives, boyfriends, girlfriends.
Oh, I think you've started on that topic. I'll tell you a funny story. 2 years ago.
Yeah, tell me, please.
2 years ago, I was working with a guy called Michael. He was an executive, and he'd been working with me for 3 months. And he rang me up on a Monday morning very early, which was unusual for him. He's a bit of a night owl. And he said, Oscar, you've nearly cost me my marriage. I said, Michael, what do you mean? He said, last Friday, my wife sat me down at the dinner table and we weren't eating dinner. The kids had gone to bed. We'd finished eating. And she looked at me straight in the eye and said, okay, come clean. I know you're having an affair. Who's it with? And because he was spending some time with me about listening, he simply asked, well, how have you formed this opinion? And his wife said, you have never paid me as much attention as you have in the last 3 months. You must be covering something up. And then he had to come clean and explain that he was having some listening coaching from me. And she said, well, I have to say, having you listen to me is probably the sexiest thing you've ever done in the last 5 years.
I love it. That's perfect. That is fantastic. That's really funny. Yeah, he outed himself unintentionally. So one last question, Oscar, as we wrap up things, I want to ask you, what is the cost? What does it cost us for just not listening at all?
Whether it's me speaking from stage and people coming up to me after I've finished talking, or the research we've done with 1,400 people, or the literature, kind of comes down to three things: conflict, chaos, confusion. Whether that's in the workplace, at home, in any other relationships in society, the cost of not listening is huge. If you're in a work environment, confusion means projects run over schedule. It means projects don't get delivered on time and on budget. But if you want to understand the cost of not listening, the Deep Horizon's oil rig that blew off the coast of New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
There's a great example. Right now, the current tally of legal costs for BP, Halliburton, and the associated companies is about $54.9 billion, and they're still going. And if you actually go into the Commission of Inquiry reports, there's a very potent couple of sentences that said that Halliburton had told BP about the lack of resilience in the design of the drilling on this particular rig. And the Commission of Inquiry basically said that BP didn't listen to Halliburton. But equally, on the rig, on the day, when, if you actually see both the movie and the Commission of Inquiry report, the staff who were the drillers were told to continue to drill despite their concerns about safety. And their concerns about safety weren't listened to, and the cost of not listening in that case was massive.
Unbelievable. So it really can cost you a lot if you're not listening. And I think it's important. Yeah.
Talk to anybody who's been divorced and they'll tell you really fast listening was one of the top three reasons why they're not in a relationship anymore. They weren't listening to the signals. They weren't listening to the words. And they weren't listening to the relationship.
Yeah, I agree. And I've been divorced, and so I get it. It makes perfect sense, you know, not to get into the weeds about that, but I do think that, yeah, no kidding. Where were you 4 years ago? I'm teasing. I think that, no, I'm kidding. It's a whole nother thing. But I do see the point that you're making in the sense that if we're not listening, you know, it's a big deal. And I think it's important to focus on what's in front of us and, if possible, put away all those distractions and really just zero in on the conversation. Now, I want to find out and let our listeners know who are listening where they can learn about you and find out more about you. You sent me this beautiful gift, and these cards are just fantastic. And I'm thinking of a million different ways that I can use them. These are the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I get a lot of presents from my guests, and I love it. And this is just very special. So thank you for this. Where can they learn about you, and where can they get these things?
Yeah, if you visit OscarTrimboli.com or just type Oscar Trimboli into Google, there's only one of me, so no matter how poorly you spell it, then Google will find you. Find you and put you in the right place there. And hey, Brett, here's the thought. We could give away five books and card sets to your listeners for those who ask you some questions, maybe, or post a review. That might be a good way for us to spread the word around listening. I'd be happy to send those to you, and you can choose how to do that. Maybe they want to post a share on social media and talk about what they got out of the podcast that they listened to. I'm not sure, but I just thought about that then when you were talking about the book and the cards and how beautiful it was. And I thought,
it's gorgeous. Yeah. And also, listeners, if you are listening and you reach out to Oscar as well, all of his information and everything that we talked about will be available in the transcript and in our show notes. Oscar Trimboli, thank you for being a part of the Open Mic Podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening.
Oscar Trimboli, thank you everyone for joining in on episode 130 of the show. Again, we're doing that giveaway. Be sure to send us an email. We would love to send you this beautiful deep listening set that he sent me. I have five of them to give away. And that's it. Hopefully we'll see you guys Friday. Say prayers for me that I feel better. My throat is killing me. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon.
That brings today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a kind rating and review. It really does help. Until next time, cheers and be well.